Are you afraid of making one mistake, sending one wrong email, saying one thing wrong on your TikTok and getting canceled and ruining your whole business and life? Let's talk about it. You're listening to the Do the Brave Thing online business podcast, where not only do you get technical advice that you can implement in your business right now to turn superstars into super customers, but also make sure that your brain does not get you in the way of actually getting in front of those people that you were meant to help. Now, let's get to it. Hey, everybody, Kate Dolster of katedolster.com, and I'm super excited for this guest episode all about cancel culture. So I do want to let you know, I did put the E on this episode because there is one F-bomb. So if you have the kids around, it's towards the end of the episode. Megan gets really passionate. I don't necessarily think that she meant it, like it was not malicious. But again, if you are sensitive to the F-word, it is indeed towards the very end of the interview. So you might want to have one of your headphones in for this. But I wanted to have Megan come on the show because she recently, at the beginning of the year, had an experience where she had produced a piece of content and it essentially got her canceled. It got her a lot of backlash. It got her a lot of hate. And as you're going to hear from Megan's story, while there were some people that were just malicious, there were some people that had some valid points. And she realized, like, oh, like I messed up. And then 2 weeks later, Megan put out a paid offer and she got called out again. And she's like, oh man. So this is the story of what happened to Megan, that piece of content that we are going to talk about, the offer that she put together, and what she has done to sort of rebound. And what I love about this interview, not only is it really candid, and we talk about some deep feelings, and we talk about some coping mechanisms, and we talk about what really got to the heart with Megan with this whole issue, is that are they right? And the thing that Megan just couldn't really stand for is, was she taking advantage of her audience? And it's the one thing that she never wanted to do, but like, were they right? Did they have any merit? We also talk about how she decided to change the name of her business, not to start completely over from scratch, but to really take the helpful general feedback that she got from this whole experience and really turn it into her business and be able to embrace her core values. And again, she talks about how long it took her to be able to bounce back, the things that she is doing, the things that she's no longer doing. And I think that it's just a really interesting conversation for those of us who are afraid that we might make a mistake and it could be detrimental and we need to just throw in the towel. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. There's links in the show notes if you want to follow more of Megan and hear more of her story. Now let's get to it.
All right, my Do the Brave Thing online business peeps. I am super excited for this episode because we have Megan that's going to come on. And I really did want to cover more of these topics kind of going forward in the show. Cause you guys know, like, I love giving you like the say this, do that, click here types of things. But when you can't really wrangle your brain or honestly, sometimes your feelings, cause brains like to play really bad tricks on us, I feel like it can prevent us from actually taking those actions, like the clicking, like the posting. And so when Megan and I were chatting, because we're online business friends as well, and we were chatting in the DMs, she's like, you know, do you think your audience would love to know about like how I kind of got canceled from my audience and some backlash and how I've been able to deal with it? You know, somebody who is a little, you know, hypersensitive, like how I've been able to kind of bounce back and what went through it and all that. And I'm like, I want to. So Megan, before we go ahead and dive in and just really have like a conversation, honestly, guys, just grab your coffee. It's just going to be two friends just kind of shooting it, talking about like, what are you doing? The internet hates you. Conversation. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Let us know your pronouns and who you love to help.
Hi there. Okay. So my name is Megan. My pronouns are she, her, and I am an ADHD life coach for the neurocurious, which basically just means I'm autistic. I'm ADHD. And I love to help other people who, you know, think they might be autistic. They might be ADHD. They certainly have some struggles that align with those things. And I kind of help you get through the in-between. So that's who I love working with.
I love that. I have to say, at least here in the States, it is very hard to get a diagnosis with ADHD and on the autism spectrum. So a lot of times it is people that are kind of like self-diagnosing until they can get someone to be like, to believe me, right? And especially millennial females, everyone's like, why is it like all of a sudden all of us are? We were all very heavily undiagnosed as children. Like, well, particularly the neurodivergency that I'm most familiar with is ADHD, since your girl's got it, right? So like, that's when she knows, but it comes up so much differently in females and in young girls than it does for males. And like, well, you can sit down, so clearly you're fine. It's like, am I? Right. It's like I'm following directions because one of the fun characteristics is you tend to be hypersensitive to criticism. So obviously, I'm not going to be a real breaker and get yelled at for looking out the window. I'm going to be in the gifted program and always get a delight to have in class. Talks too much. Like, I feel like
Yes.
that's like the ultimate. Like, if this is on your report card, chances are some of the stuff that Megan usually talks about outside of the scope is going to help you out because, you know, your brain's a little bit different. But I think that a lot of people, when they hear neurodivergent, probably from hanging out with me, they really just think of ADHD, like attention deficit disorder. So what does it like encompass, if you don't mind asking? And then we're definitely going to get into your story.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that question. So neurodivergence, I believe the word neurodivergent was coined by Kassiana Asasmasu, who she or they are a multiply neurodivergent person and advocate. And they defined it loosely, this is me paraphrasing, but as any brain or mind that deviates from the societally expected norm. Which means neurodivergence includes things like autism and ADHD, but it also includes learning disabilities like dyslexia. It includes dementia and Alzheimer's. It includes acquired forms of neurodivergence that you weren't necessarily born with, like traumatic brain injury or trauma in general, emotional trauma. So it can be lots of things.
Now, did you have a diagnosis when you were younger, or is this something that came about a little bit later on?
Later on, for sure. I was diagnosed both autistic and ADHD combined type at 27.
Gotcha. So it's one of those things that now it's like, this would have really helped young me.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Just a little bit because you tend to think these things are normal. And then it's like, wait a minute. Like if y'all have an appointment at like 1:15, you guys can like do stuff from 10 to like one and not worry about missing your call and not just be like stuck in like a holding pattern. That's not like a real thing. And you're like, what? It's really interesting when it comes to this. So I would love to hear about you doing the brave thing and you were taking action and you wanted to really start being a leader in your industry. I know that you wanted to talk for underrepresented voices, but that kind of ended up getting you in hot water a little bit. So could you tell us about some of the stories when you were coming from a good place, but maybe it's like, oh, this wasn't like quite my battle to lead per se.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. So I have been on TikTok for about 3 years and I've built up a pretty like awesome audience and community over there. And I decided I wanted to talk about autism and whether it was a disability or a disorder because I had been learning from some cool people about like the stigma of the word disorder and how unhelpful it can be. And so in my opinion, I very much view autism as a disability, but not so much as a disorder. But I made a TikTok that did not phrase it that way. You know, I did not say like, oh, in my opinion, oh, for me, oh, you know, any of that. I was just like, it's not a disorder. If you think of it as a disorder, like you're wrong. And when people tried to argue with me or to say like, hey, this isn't helpful, you're kind of speaking over a lot of people who like and benefit from the disorder language. I doubled down and got frankly pretty condescending. It's not something I'm very proud of, but it is something I want to be honest about, because yeah, it sucked. It's one of those things you look back and you're like, why did I make a TikTok while I was that dysregulated? I should have chilled out for like 20 minutes and all of this could have been avoided.
I think that that's what a lot of people fear is creating that one TikTok or that one Instagram post, or in a lot of cases when they're following me, like they're going to send that one email and it's like, it's going to ruin everything. So did it like ruin your whole business? Did it just like ruin your attitude? Like what steps did you take afterwards? How has your audience reacted since? Like, I'd love to know all the juicy things.
Yeah. Well, just so that the whole story is clear too, there was another mistake that was like 2 weeks later. So it frustrated people that I made two such large mistakes back to back. It felt, some people expressed that it felt like I didn't really learn anything from the first mistake, which they wouldn't totally be wrong. I didn't reflect as much as I should have. And so the second mistake I made was offering a course I just wasn't qualified or equipped to offer, basically. I used some language that was unhelpful and unclear, frankly, and people were really upset. I basically wanted to teach people how to be a life coach, because I've been doing it for 3 years and I really love it. And I think I'm pretty decent at it. And I thought I could teach people. And I called it like the neurodivergent life coaching certification course or something. And people were frustrated with the use of the word neurodivergent because I can't teach people to work with epilepsy or Down syndrome or anything like that. It's mostly ADHD and autism. And then people were also very frustrated with the word certification, considering I'm not associated with the International Coaching Federation or any other, you know, like of those big players in the coaching industry. So there were two mistakes back to back, and I think that was a big part of people's frustration. It wasn't just that I messed up. It was that I messed up, and then I didn't learn anything, and I messed up again. And I think that really solidified in people's minds that I actually had bad intentions, and they were starting to show, you know, behind the facade I had supposedly built up over the years of, like, kindness and helpfulness.
Oh, and I'm sure, and I know for a fact, just from knowing you, that like that's the exact opposite of what you're going for. Like, you're not trying to actually take advantage of, especially, you know, very marginalized communities. So were people confused? Did they think like, oh, it's so that way I can learn to be a life coach for people that have neurodivergence? Or was it that they thought like, oh, I have neurodivergency, but now I can still be a life coach?
I think a lot of people had a problem with just life coaching in general. That was a big part of the backlash, was just like, life coaches are, you know, it's a scam. It's a fraud. Like, it's bullshit, basically. And teaching other people how to be life coaches, people used the word pyramid scheme a lot, which is not how pyramid schemes work. That's not what that is. I'm not getting any money from people becoming a life coach except for teaching you how to do it, I guess. But anyway, so I think people's problem was that I hadn't been coaching long enough to teach other people how to do it. I had not been through a ICF certified program myself, so they were frustrated that I was offering another non-ICF certified program, you know? And so there were some very legitimate concerns. There were some concerns that I felt were a little less poignant for me, at least, like the concern about life coaching in general. I hear that. I understand that. But also, I think getting rid of life coaching entirely is kind of like throwing out the baby with the bathwater. And I think that's a little too far personally. So
I'm going to agree with you on honestly, just like coaching in general. And I think that while they might have used the term like pyramid scheme or MLM, I think that it's more of like a cyclical thing. I think what people don't like are like life coaches teaching life coaches how to like life coach. But like, that's also people that don't realize that, like, especially for, and I can see that where this would be like for normal consumers too. And like, you just feel like your life is a mess. Having that other person to like hold you accountable helps. And like, that's why business coaching, like, yes, it can seem very like, oh, come into my $25,000 mastermind so I can tell you how to sell a $10,000 mastermind. Like, I can see how it's very like circular like that. And it's almost like a snake eating its tail, but it's like, there are some really good benefits to it. So I do think that that's interesting. Do you think that, I guess my biggest question would be, so you got all excited to launch this thing, which you thought was actually from a place of like, this is going to be awesome. This is going to help a lot of people. So did you just like stop mid-launch? Like, did people buy it and you refund them? Did you like, how did you handle something that you felt like, oh, this could be like a thing or the signature offer. And now it's like, oh, it's not just like no one's buying per se, but now it's like there's backlash.
No, it was really interesting. I actually got the whole spectrum. I got several people bought like right away. They were thrilled and excited to be part of it. Some people a lot of people made videos about me on TikTok and Instagram, including people who had direct access to me, who like had DM'd me before, had emailed me before, and they elected not to reach out to me personally and instead dragged me publicly. So that was very hurtful, finding out that there were some friendships in my life that apparently were not friendships at all. You know, these were people whose names I said in important rooms, and it's weird to find out they weren't saying mine. So there was that for sure. But basically, I listened to a little bit of the backlash and kind of wrote it off as like, you know, you can't do anything online without some people being mad at you. So you can't listen to everything. But I listened to a couple of videos and I was like, you know what? I hate this. I think they're right. And it sucks when you realize you've screwed up. It sucks because I made a grand in like 2 days that I had to go ahead and refund. And of course I was going to refund them. And I had to issue a ton of very heartfelt apologies on TikTok and via email and on Instagram. And, but yeah, basically, I launched the course so excited, started to get feedback that people were unhappy, kind of listened, about 24 hours went by, and then I was like, these are people whose opinions I trust. And even though I'm hurt that they didn't reach out to me personally, I think they might be right. And so I took it down, took the sales page down, it disappeared. I refunded everyone and issued apologies. And then from there, I took 3 weeks off from content creation, I think almost 4 weeks. Like, I didn't send emails. I think I posted on Instagram once or twice because I had agreed to support a bundle that I was in. So I went ahead and did that. Some people were mad at me for that, which, you know, like I said, you can't do anything online without people being mad. That's not the same as being like canceled, but this was aggressive. There were definitely tens, potentially hundreds of videos about me on TikTok for a little while there. So it was a lot.
Oh man. So did you just like, I know you said that you took probably around a month off besides the obligations that you had, which I'm very sure that the bundle host appreciated, that you were able to do that and to promote it. So from bundle hosts everywhere, thank you for showing up. Were you ever just like, I'm done with business. Like, maybe I should just go look for something else. Like, was it enough to make you like throw in the towel or like question everything? Like, what was going on?
Oh goodness. Yeah. I was on our local community college. I've taught college level English before as like a TA. So I was looking for adjunct positions. I was like, I can't, my nervous system can't take this. Like, I can't be hated this much. It's too hard. And there was a big part of me that was like, what if they're right? Like, what if I am like a horrible person? And not even what if I'm a horrible person, but what if the business I've built is doing more harm than good? That was the big question. Because the what if I'm a horrible person, I'm a little more adept at handling that because I've done so much shame work over the years. And like, I'm a little better at like, okay, dealing with like who I am as a person is not bad. It's okay to screw up. But I was looking for the larger pattern, right? Because that's what a lot of people were mad about, that I had made two mistakes, like right back to back, like what is going on here? And I guess I just was worried that they were right, that my business was doing harm and that I wasn't helping people the way I wanted to.
I think that's what I find with a lot of us is that we, like, obviously we always want our clients and our communities to get great results, whether it is their plants are looking great, they've got chickens in the backyard, they are making money from selling their own knowledge, and to really look back and think like, am I hurting people instead of helping people? And are they right? Like, how were you able to, if you don't mind, like, what are some of the tools or things or reflections? Like, how were you able to work through and decipher all of this and not just be like, I'm done?
Yeah, it was a lot of conversations with other people. So I spoke to an online friend who disagreed with what I was doing, and we talked a little bit. I talked with an online friend who they were, you know, like, yeah, I wasn't so sure about some of those things, but I also don't know that you deserve what's happening right now. So they were very, very helpful and supportive and a good like wall to bounce ideas off of, basically. And my husband was endlessly supportive. You know, he took the position of like, screw him, like, you are the best and I love you, you know, which is helpful. But also I'm like, I don't think they're full of shit though, dear. Like, I think they have a point. But what helped me a little bit is like, how do I basically trying to pull apart what they did that was helpful and what they did that wasn't helpful. Helpful versus unhelpful is like the paradigm through which I see the entire world, because it is helpful to me. And there were a lot of people who were really mad, who it seemed like the things they were saying were unhelpful. It was more about shaming me than it was about helping others. And that helped me. I was like, okay, that's the kind of stuff I can ignore. Versus there were other people who were like, no, you're wrong because of this, 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 and this, and I'm mad. And that, as much as that sucks to listen to, is much more constructive. And I mean, I have ADHD. I have rejection sensitivity so bad, and it was really hard. But I just, honestly, like, it kind of came down to some really supportive people in my inbox. I had a lot of people on my email list who were frankly a little upset I was no longer offering the course. They were like, I really wanted it and I trust you and I wanted to buy this. And so there was that. There were other people who were like, I offer it, don't offer it, either way, like, you're great and I'm not going anywhere, which was very comforting. And then there were other people who were like, hey, you know, that course kind of rubbed me the wrong way, or that TikTok about autism and disorder versus disability, that rubbed me the wrong way. I'm really glad you said something, like, I'm not going anywhere either. And there was just a lot of support in addition to all the hate. So that's kind of what kept me in the business.
I love that. Like, have you thought of repackaging some of the material in just like a different way? Or are you just like, that's still like too much of like a hot button issue for me to even like talk about it, but it could be like tips or like a little bonus or something else? Like, or is it just like, you know, I'm just going to leave all of that content and those ideas alone for a while?
I think I'm going to leave them alone for a little while. I think some of the criticisms I took to heart and that made a lot of sense to me were like, if I'm going to call it a certification, I would like to go through the ICF and get it certified properly, for sure. To do that, I think I should probably take a certification program myself. I think my lived experience is incredibly valuable and helpful, and I think I've helped a lot of people so far. And I acknowledge that there's a lot more to learn. And so I'm on the wait list for a program I really like. So I'm excited for that. And yeah, so moving forward, I don't think I'm going to venture into the teaching people how to coach thing, at least not right now. And also some people were like, you know, 3 years is not actually that long. It feels like forever when you have ADHD, but it's actually like there are coaches out there who've been doing this for decades and they probably have a lot more value than I do. And so people should learn from them.
Gotcha. I like that. So you went ahead, you said you didn't quite get canceled, but I guarantee you at the moment, it kind of felt like it. I know you felt horrible because it made you feel like you're taking advantage of the exact opposite of the people that you want to actually help and that you would never come with malintention. But I do love how you reflected on it. You're like, oh, I can see how this would happen, how this would come across. After that sort of like 4 week cool down, how did you get back into the swing of things with business? Because I imagine if you just like don't business for like a month, trying to like get yourself to show up again and all of the to-dos that are piling up and then all of like that mental and emotional damage, right? Like, it definitely little T trauma, not big T trauma, like a little T trauma of like trying to get there. Like, how did you start digging yourself back out of the hole when you're like, I don't think that I'm going to go back to teaching if I don't have to, but like, now what?
Yeah. So during that like 3 to 4 weeks I took off, I was journaling almost every day. I was pulling oracle cards. I was crying a lot. I was doing EFT tapping. I was talking to loved ones. Like, those were my coping skills. But in addition to that, I was working on the business behind the scenes. So I wasn't creating content, but what I was doing was a rebrand. Basically, I had learned my lesson about the word neurodivergent. It's too big a word for what I do. And so I changed my business name. Like my entire business name changed from Neurodivergent Magic to the Neurocuriosity Club. I like the idea of neurocuriosity, the idea of people who aren't sure where they fit having a home, you know? And I decided my title would change from Neurodivergent Life Coach to ADHD Life Coach for the neurocurious, you know? Again, that felt really specific, which felt much better. Along with that, I outlined my values. I did a lot of journaling on what I actually value as a business owner and as a human in general. And so I outlined those values. They're on my website so anyone can see them and hold me accountable and hold me to those values. And I restructured pricing for a lot of my programs to offer more equitable pricing. So there's like options now for people who, you know, I work with a lot of disabled folks who might be on disability benefits. And in the US, that's incredibly limiting income wise. So I changed some things around there. And yeah, when I came back and started creating content again, I did so like not slowly in the sense that I would post once and then not come back for a week. Like I started slow in the sense that I reintroduced people to me through this new lens. So I haven't gone back to TikTok at all. That place feels it gives me a tremendous amount of anxiety just to think about and talk about. So I feel like creating on there was not the right move. So I made an apology video. I made two apology videos actually, posted them and then deleted the app off my phone. So my account still exists, but I don't use TikTok anymore, at least not for now. However, I've been creating a lot on Instagram, on my podcast, on YouTube, all the fun places, my email list. And on those places, I was like, okay, this is Megan from Neurodivergent Magic. You know, everything's changed a little bit. So the reintroduction. And then from there, I went into like a three-part post that I have used when I've really screwed up in the past. And that's apology, explanation, and future actions. So that's really what I like to address when I've just completely fucked up. So apology is pretty self-explanatory. Explanation, I always say, is like not to undercut the apology. It's just like, let's understand how I got here so that I don't get here again. And then that sort of leads into future steps, which is like, all right, what's going to be different moving forward? What can you expect? And that's where I could tell people, you can expect that I'm going to respect your self-sovereignty over my judgment a lot more now. But what you shouldn't expect is for me to not be a life coach anymore. I am going to be a life coach. That's not something I'm sorry for. And I'm just sorry for the way I may have misrepresented my qualifications and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how I got back on the horse.
So it's like gradual, like a couple of like weeks, you're just like, you know what? I gave myself like a month and now I'm just like, I'm back. Or it's just like you said, just kind of like trickling. And I really love what you said about how like TikTok's just not the place for you anymore. You did your apology videos and you left it. And that's not the only avenue that you have to talk to your audience, to build your audience. You know, you were talking, you know, to your email list, you're talking, you know, to YouTube and on your podcast and the rebrand. It's almost kind of like a metamorphosis, if you will. So do you feel like you're in a much better spot in business? Are those wounds kind of sort of healed? Not really. Where would you think that like they're sort of creeping their head? And I would also love to hear more about your new pricing model that came out of this too.
Yeah. As for the wounds, they're kind of in that festery stage, you know, where they're really gross looking, but you know that the grossness means that it's healing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like talking about TikTok is hard. I had 300,000 followers over there. Like that's really hard to walk away from, but it was no small amount of people who were mad at me. It was like the videos that other people made would get hundreds of likes and comments. So there were a lot of people, even if they weren't directly posting about me, who agreed. And I just felt like people were mad at me. To be honest, I was a little mad back. And like, I felt like the kindest thing for all of us would be for me to not necessarily be on there right now. I would love to go back at some point, but I need to work on my own anxiety. And something we were talking about before we hit record is like this fragile sense of self. And that really describes me. I outsource my reality and my validation to others all the time, all the time. And I thought I was getting better at it, but I think I was just, instead of outsourcing it to the old people I used to outsource it to, I started outsourcing it to TikTok. So when people disagreed with me, it really felt earth-shattering and like personhood shattering. So I'm in a much better place than that for sure, which is nice and good. It's still very tender, I think is the right word. Like things are healing, but it's sad to lose. 'Cause that's the other thing. I built my audience up to so many people because I posted three TikToks a day every day for 3 years. Like I
Oh,
did not
man.
miss a whole lot, except for like I took like a week or two off for maternity leave. But even that, I jumped back in because I love it so much. Short form video is my jam. Like I'm good at it, you know? So yeah, it's sad to walk away from that for sure. But I also am like finding a lot of joy in the new brand and everything. It's very colorful. I love it very much. And I'm getting a lot of reminders from people on my list, people on my Instagram, like that I'm helpful. Like the things I do are in fact helpful. So that is really helpful and kind. So the pricing model is actually inspired by Emily Ann Brandt. She is a
Brand.
decolonized coach, basically. She's teaching folks how to like decolonize their coaching, which I love. And so her course, the Decolonized Coaching Course, has equitable pricing. And I messaged her. I was like, "Can I replicate this whole thing you've got going on? I will credit you, I promise. Like, I love this." And she was like, "Sure." So basically, how it works is there's a base price, which is the same price this my signature program has always been, which is $997, right? Then and that there's a description on the sales page that explains who each pricing point is for, right? So there's a $300 discounted price. That is the community member price. And that is for people, you know, who might be on disability benefits. They're on a limited income. They're not allowed to have more than $2,000 in their bank account, you know, like, so it's discounted, right? It's for college students who would be paying it for it mostly by themselves, you know, stuff like that. It has lists of who it's for. The base price is for, you know, people who have some disposable income. It might be a stretch, but they will do no financial harm to themselves by paying this price, you know? And then there's also the community supporter price, which is $300 more than the base price. And this is like, you have no major debts, you own property, you have some disposable income, you can buy your needs and your desires like most of the time. And you just really want to support someone who needs the community member price. So that's sort of what that is set up for.
So, do they get anything more or less depending on which tier they're in, or do they get access to everything?
It's the same for everybody.
And nobody, like,
So,
they can just, it's one of those like self-validation models where it's like, you don't have to like show me proof that you're a college student or any of that
no,
sort of
honor
stuff.
system all the way.
No, so how has your audience responded to that model?
Some people were like, how is, you know, because the more expensive tier is $1,297. So somebody was like, how is $1,297 equitable pricing? And I'm like, well, you chose the highest tier. Like, if that describes you, that's not going to do you financial harm. So it is equitable. Now, if that's too high for you and that will do you financial harm, there's one that's $600 cheaper. So let's not like misconstrue what's going on here. So some people were still like confused or upset about it, but a lot of people have chosen that option, and have, you know, said like, this is, I've been following you for a while and it hasn't been accessible to me yet. And now it is. So that's been good.
I'm glad that they are liking it. Now, did all of your products get an overhaul? Because I know you said you went through, you renamed to something that felt better, that felt more authentic, that you would talk about. You redid your branding and your website. And of course, we're going to have links to all of the new stuff so that all you guys can see it. So, was it like all of the products and stuff got an overhaul, or is it just the signature offer that has the equitable pricing? It's equitable pricing, right? Is that the term?
It's just my signature program that has equitable pricing right now. I am looking at introducing scholarship spots for like one-on-ones and for the signature program and everything. So I'm looking at that as well. My membership actually, before all of this happened, recently switched from a set price to pay what you can. So that's been really beneficial for a lot of people. We have so many cool people in there now who, couldn't have been in it before. So that's been really wonderful. And let's see. As for the other products, like my digital products and stuff, I changed one or two of the names just based on, some changes in values, basically. But for the most part, digital products have stayed the same.
Gotcha. Okay. So it wasn't like, oh, everything isn't necessarily pay what you can or pay what you feel. It's just, again, the bigger ones, the more signature ones, the ones that have access to probably you and a community, right? Because most digital products are just like, you're on your own, kid. Have fun with your download or your templates or your planner. So I love that you took what could be a complete business and honestly brain-breaking experience, and that you were willing to not just be like, screw all the haters, like all of this sort of stuff. And I don't feel like at all that you are like going around like you want to like profit off of this, like, like, oh, like turn haters into cash, or like, oh, like that sort of stuff. Like, not at all. Like, you went in it and you're like, no, like, this is what happens when you're like, what if people hate me? And it's a lot of people all of a sudden that hate you, and how you are not necessarily letting it stop you, but you allowed yourself to have a human experience, right? Like, it wasn't like this was like instantaneous where it's like, oh, I was over it in like 24 hours and we were back at it. No, it took a while, and I'm sure that there's still little things here and there that sort of pop up. So what's the big plans for going forward and the business and how you're handling content and just how you're not going to let this defy you forever, but definitely leave a nice shape, if you will.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. I don't want it to define me forever, but I want it to have changed me, So, moving forward, we're kind of taking a much more calm approach to the business. I think having some check marks in place so that when I get a new idea, I run it by some folks first, like, hey, before I put this on the internet and, realize it's a huge mistake, like, what if we talk about it? So I've got some of those in place, which is helpful. And the big plans for the business moving forward is kind of just doing business as usual, but better. Like doing it kinder, doing it gentler, doing it with more respect, I think. So that is kind of the plan moving forward. We actually just started a live round for the Get Shit Done program, which is my signature program. So that's going to be very, very fun. Everybody gets to come to group coaching on Mondays and then teaching calls on Wednesdays. And it's just a productivity powerhouse. So.
Oh, I love it. I love that you are excited again about your business and about moving forward, and again about helping those in your community who did stick around. And it does seem like that it was a majority of the people. And again, if the ones that didn't, they obviously left. And again, I like how you said that there were some people who were respectful, like, yeah, not really your finest moment there. But again, we all make mistakes, because I feel like we feel like if we make a mistake, like we've burnt everything down to the ground. It's the worst. We're never going to recover. We're a horrible person. It definitely seems like everything's like catastrophic. So if you had one piece of advice for our listeners today, whether it comes to doing the brave thing, whether it comes from bouncing back from criticism, or whether you just feel like you are just always in behind and you're not like in that headspace that you want to be at, what's one thing that you would ask them to do today to start like turning things around or cutting themselves some slack?
Okay. The biggest thing I'd want people to know is don't let my story scare you. Okay. Don't let my story scare you into silence because listen, I'm right here. I'm okay. I'm alive. I'm human. Everything's okay. I kind of got canceled and not only is my business still okay, but I as a person am still okay. And so I don't want this to like freak you out or make you like, I knew it. I knew this could happen to anyone at any time. And therefore I'm not going to create any content until it's perfect and completely uncriticizable, because that doesn't exist. It just doesn't. It doesn't exist. And in addition to that, like, mistakes are human. That was a big part of my apology, was like, this is going to happen again. And I'm already sorry, but I can't not be human. I can't do that for you. So don't let it scare you. And if you are scared of cancel culture, if you are kind of in a headspace where you would love to create, but you're so afraid of the backlash and the criticism and the rejection, my biggest piece of advice is get some super fans in your community who are going to defend you, who are going to be there for you. And this can be your mom. This can be your best friend. My best friend commented on a couple of my posts just to, you know, make the feed a little more positive for me. And yeah, it's going to be okay. And I think my biggest piece of advice to avoid the like earth shattering horribleness is do not get your validation from social media. It is a fickle, fickle beast.
It really is. It really is. Like you said, it was more like you were sort of, you know, sad that you had, you know, put so much time and effort into a platform. And it's like, oh, it's just, it's not there for me right now, but there are other avenues that I can take. And again, you're still doing short form video. It's just in different places now that feel more safe. So maybe that's some advice, right? Like, again, we always want to like push your boundaries, but maybe, you know, if writing is truly a thing, then maybe it's just writing on your blog more, and then like, you know, be like brave and like auto schedule, like even like Facebook will let you auto schedule to Instagram, like auto schedule, like a snippet from your blog to Instagram, like start building up those muscles. I think that sometimes people are just like, oh, I have to rip off the band-aid and go 0 to 100. You can go from like 0 to 20. Like, it's okay. We'll get you up to 100. Like, the little bits can definitely help. So where else can people hang out with you online? Where can they check out your new branding? Let us know everything, Megan.
Yeah. Okay. So my website is just theneurocuriosityclub.com. My Instagram is theneurocuriosityclub, and so is my YouTube. And I think that's all the things. I have a free like pre-recorded webinar called You're Not Too Sensitive. So if there's sensitive souls out there listening and very worried about rejection, that freebie will be in the show notes, I believe. So yeah.
It will definitely be in the show notes along with links to the other things that we have talked about as well today. Thank you so much, Megan. I feel like a lot of people are going to get a lot out of this interview, and I think that they're going to be a little bit braver so they can go ahead and do that brave thing.
Well, look at that, action taker. You made it all the way to the end. Kudos to you. So if you want to keep this do the brave thing momentum going, because let's be real, sure, listening to a 25 to 30 minute podcast can definitely get you amped, but what are you going to do the rest of the week? Make sure you're following me over on Instagram, Kate_Doster. There's a link in the bio. And if you absolutely love this episode, it would be fantastic if you could leave us a rating and review or share a screenshot and tag us on your Instagram stories. I'll see you next week. Later days.